In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
I'm Andrew Gold, a fallen BBC journalist interviewing the heretics and rebels brave enough to speak out against mainstream narratives. Here's Coleman Hughes, John Ronson, and the Trigonometry podcast guys bringing controversy to the fore.
How'd you feel if a person of a different race moved in next door?
I spent a while with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan.
The system punishes people for wrongthink. It's heartbreaking.
Here's My Unorthodox Life Netflix star Julia Hart on getting out of a Hasidic Jewish cult.
Why can't I be okay with being silent and subservient? Everyone else is.
And biologist Richard Dawkins on trans activism.
It's perfectly legitimate to say, I am a man, but I feel feminine. But to then say, therefore I am a woman, is just a betrayal of language.
Now it's your turn. Rebel against the mainstream and find a home in this sensible alternative space by subscribing to Heretics Podcast.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Plinky County 911. There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Richard Serrett's Strange Planet, following the truth wherever it leads, exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites, revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality, coming to you from the Great White North and his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard.
And welcome once again to another episode of Strange Planet. On this episode, Wes Roberts is a 30-plus year contract college professor, who teaches his students how to use basic computer applications. But throughout his life, Wes experienced unusual events that fall under the general umbrella of the paranormal. From his teens to the present day, he's also experienced events which he describes as alien contacts and experiences, having tried to explain away some of these events as dreams, hallucinations, visions, etc. Wes is convinced many experiences cannot be explained away through conventional theories. After 20 years, Wes decided to seek professional advice for a consciously recalled experience he had in the 1980s, and he's here to talk about his research with experiencers, his own experiences, abductees and the not so uncommon occurrence of information downloads. He is the co-author of Intersections, A True Story of Extraterrestrial Contact, and the author of An Experiencer's Garden. Wes Roberts, welcome. How are you?
Richard, thank you for that lovely welcome. I'm very well, thanks.
I think I lost your camera there. If you want to turn on your camera.
Computer problem. There, oh, I'm back.
He's back. All right.
So thank you for having me. I'm good.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Let's go back to the 1980s. Let's dive right in. What happened?
I woke up from a very unusual experience and had a bit of time displacement. I was staring right at a digital clock, alarm clock, and it went through 5 minutes in about 5 seconds. And so I was awake and sitting up at that point. I remembered everything that happened to me. So I hurried myself into another bedroom and scratched it all down on a piece of paper. And for 19 years or so, I let it replay in my mind a number of times without really knowing what it was, thinking, you know, this can't be what I think it is, which is an abduction, but it was.
What did you scratch down on that paper? Give us some kind of some images that played over and over and over again in your mind from your memory.
Yes, will do. It was sort of a staged experience, Richard, meaning it took place in four or five stages or phases, if you want to call them that. I use the word stage on purpose because it seems to me our alien friends sometimes set a stage and we step on it and then they watch and see what happens with a little manipulation in the way. But stage one was my being at an airport in the middle of the night. It was closed. There was no one else there as far as I knew. I was watching planes take off in the distance. And suddenly a plane I saw caught on fire. And I was looking around, all around me in a panic, thinking, how can I help? Can I help? What am I going to do? And within a second or two, I found myself on the plane. And so the first stage was the airport setup. It's sort of like, okay, this is how we'll get the transition from standing in the airport to being on the plane. I wasn't in a seat. I was in a washroom, rear washroom, closed in, locked in. I heard all the stuff that we hear on planes, except passengers. So I heard the whoosh of the air, recirculated air. I heard the jet turbines. And I honestly felt that was it. That was going to be the end. I was going to go down with this plane. That was the end. I don't know how much time I have. Turns out I have 30 to 60 seconds on the plane. And I was sort of reaching out psychically, knowing that I, whatever I was still at home in my bed with my partner. So I tried to reach her mind and say, you know, so long, I love you, this is the end. And so I felt I was successful, and that was later proven to be somewhat true, actually. I did seem to reach her, but suddenly there was smack. There was a period of blackness. I guess it was a period of missing time. I do not know how long it lasted. As my eyes opened and began to adjust to the light, I was ushered into stage three. So stage three was me walking into what seemed to be a condo or an apartment, average, except it was pristine. It was as if it was made up for me, like there wasn't a piece of dust. It looked like it was never lived in. And so stage three was a lengthy stage. I was allowed to wander through this apartment or condo examining things. And some of the things were straightforward. You know, there was furniture, there was couches. I was able to go back and forth to the bedroom a couple of times. There's a bed. There was photo albums, which I looked in. There is a black rotary dial phone. in the hallway, along with a little black book. I mean, literally, that was plucked somewhere out of here, out of my mind. And I actually tried to, I know it sounds strange, phone home. I actually tried to phone home, but I couldn't remember my number and I couldn't find myself in the book. So after a time of wandering back and forth and everything was pretty stable, like this wasn't like a dreamscape where furniture changes or a phone changes or a photo album changes. It was all cohesive. Nothing changed.
That's how you ruled out that this was just a dream.
Pretty much. And, you know, I've had lucid dreams. I've had out-of-the-body experiences. And then I've had these things. And so it took me a lot of wrestling with it to decide this was not a dream. So eventually, when I was in panic mode, I felt the presence of a being nearby. And the being was basically thinking, okay, the gig is up or the jig is up. He's becoming aware. And it's not the first time this has happened to me when I become aware. It's like, stop, time to change the experience because the subject's becoming aware. So I was walked out of the room and the next stage was me walking across what seemed to be a field or a tarmac. Another alien joined on the other side. So I was escorted. All the aliens were the same, and I never saw them straight on, but there's a long lineup of other alien beings and other people I took to be humans. And we were all walked toward a facility, and I thought it was customs in my own mind. I guess this is masking. I don't know what it was, but I thought it was customs. So I went through customs without a problem, entered a one-person elevator. Seemed to be an elevator. And suddenly, intensely bright lights above me and below me and motion. And I couldn't tell if the motion was up or down. And I couldn't open my eyes to the light. They were so bright. Then when the door swished open, the last and final phase of the experience was members of my family, or at least they look like members of my family, were at the airport to collect me and drive me home. And that's pretty much the whole of it in condensed form.
And that was your first memory of this paranormal, this sequence of different stages. And then there were others. I mean, at what point did you decide that you were going to get some professional help, regression therapist, and find out what was going on?
So it was 19 years or so after this experience, and I'd only shared it with a couple of people. I shared it with someone who's now my ex, Elizabeth. So I shared it with her, and she had to tend to me when I was going through some really weird times over those years, especially the last few years. And I shared it with a teacher friend. And I finally found another good friend who said, if it were her, she would seek professional assistance. And I waited one more year, and I finally did that. And so that was the most prominent consciously recalled experience I had. And I've had a number before and a number after, and then a number uncovered through hypnotherapy.
Can you share one that you also uncovered, maybe that predates that experience, maybe one from childhood?
I can share one that was uncovered in my first or second session with Leslie. I was in I'd say it's a farmhouse. It was an active farm. And this was a physical abduction, I was to find out. They're not all physical, but this was a physical abduction. I was a little boy, and a little girl or something like a little girl showed up. She didn't exactly look like a little girl. She had bare feet, long spindly arms and hands. Her head was slightly oval, I guess, not exactly like ours. And otherwise, just like a little girl. And before I was to show her around, because that was the mental order I was getting, show her around. Before I did that, I asked mentally, is this a real farmhouse? You know, is this a real place? And I was told, again, mentally, yeah, it's a real farmhouse. The owners are not around right now. And it's like, okay. So like a little kid of, I must have been 6 or 7, I took this little girl, creature, around by the hand and showed her stuff that you and I would recognize in an instant. A table, a fridge, you know, a lamp. She touched things. She looked in the fridge. She didn't know what that stuff was. It was just blobs of color to her. And we were going to go and head up the stairs, and she resisted going up the stairs. She was afraid, and she'd never gone upstairs. And it's like, okay, around that time, bye-bye experience. And I woke up in my bed shortly thereafter.
You mentioned a difference. There's a physical abduction. What are the other kinds?
I theorize there's only one other kind, which is a spirit abduction. An abduction of spirit, an etheric abduction, where they take your spirit or soul or whatever you want to call it. I have a feeling that consciousness is non-local anyway. So they take that thing and they put it through experiences, which of course you remember everything unless they mask the memory. And any trauma, good or bad, yeah, usually negative, but not in my case, any trauma, you remember. And so it's as if you were, I can't say like an out-of-the-body experience, but you're somewhere else in spirit and you're experiencing something and it all registers. It all registers. And when you get up in the morning or when you become aware that you've been through something, you remember it all. You feel it all.
You mentioned the regression hypnotist that you went to see, mm-hmm. Leslie mm-hmm. Mitchell Clark.
Yes.
Let's explore that. What that was like, and when you with her help started to piece this together.
So it's funny, Richard, because when I was looking for a hypnotherapist, I found someone who I wrote to, and she said, "Well, I don't deal with folks like you," and that's fine, you know, it's kind of a specialty. And I said, okay, fine. And she gave me Leslie's name. So I got in touch with Leslie and we exchanged a call or two or an email or two. And then she wanted to interview me and do a pre-assessment, you know, something I call a triage. And, you know, she walks you through all the things that she needs to do to protect you and protect herself. And if she feels that your case or what you've gone through is psychological or medical purely, then she's going to send you to a different expert. And so it's a bit of a lengthy assessment, a lot of questions and answers. I think she felt, and I guess I proved it with 5 years of hypnotherapy, I think she felt I was a stable character and I'd been through some trauma. And when I went to see her, I was really on the edge for 2 or 3 years. It was affecting my performance as a teacher. I was afraid to go to sleep. I mean, it was more than time I should have seen her. So we set up our first session, ostensibly to explore the 80s experience, but that did not happen. You know, the first two experiences were completely not about the 80s. In fact, we had to go back to that experience years later.
So did you discover that this was a nightly occurrence, a weekly occurrence? How frequent?
For a time, the feeling of presence, the feeling of being visited, the feeling that there were others around was easily several times a week, pretty steady for 2 or 3 years. Nothing necessarily happened, although, you know, through hypnosis, yes, you had all these other experiences, but my deal was I just couldn't close my eyes. And if I closed my eyes, I thought, that's it. I'm vulnerable. They are going to come and do what they want to do anyway. Like, I have no choice. I was later to discover, well, I might have some choice, not the full range of choice that I prefer, because I can't simply call them up when I wish or say, that's the range for me to do this or do that. They kind of put you in predicaments or scenarios when they want to, as they feel it's necessary. So my, I guess, close to panic attacks at points were common enough that I didn't feel stable sometimes.
Were you ever close to, before you decided to go see Leslie Mitchell Clark, did you go through a battery of, I don't know, psychological tests, anything like that?
I did not. I spoke to people I knew, trusted people, one or two in the medical community. No one was a doctor. No one was a psychologist or a psychiatrist. And I actually didn't know, Richard. Being hypnotized, I actually wanted to find out if this was real, if this was part of my memory, and or if it was something I'd made up. And I was sort of fearful that it was something I made up, because then the next step would be off to the psychologist or psychiatrist.
We'll take a quick time out and come back and discuss the remarkable case of Wes Roberts. Stay with us.
Overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market, you know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet.
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
We all enjoy a little mystery. Every other week, One Strange Thing presents forgotten stories from America's newspaper archives. They all have something in common, a single element that can't quite be explained. Join us on One Strange Thing, and you'll hear about a man who was literally stricken with genius. A 21st century child who remembered piloting a World War II bomber. A mysterious, unidentifiable blob in Texas. And then there was the lizard man stalking through small-town South Carolina. From cryptids and disappearances to modern-day miracles, One Strange Thing brings you stories that are very real and just a little otherworldly. Subscribe now, wherever you listen.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to redefine reality. This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
Wes Roberts is with us, a lifelong experiencer, the co-author of Intersections, A True Story of Extraterrestrial Contact. The co-author is Leslie Mitchell Clark, who was his regression hypnotist or therapist, and he's also the author of An Experiencer's Garden. When you found out through hypnosis that this was real, were you fearful? I mean, what, now that you know that it's real, I mean, how does that alleviate the anxiety and the panic and allowing you to close your eyes at night knowing that this is ongoing?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. And I guess I can address it several ways. When I came out of my first session, I was almost crying because it was real. I recall saying to Leslie something like, is this stuff for real? And she assured me that it was. And actually, it was later proven, Leslie said she's found evidence of the fact that you're accessing memory and not imagination when you do hypnosis. So that part was a relief that quickly turned into frustration. Because the experiences in my case, and I think in a lot of cases, don't stop. They just do not stop. They're just going to be through with you through your lifetime. And so the frustration and anger came about, which we worked through over many, many sessions, because I felt I was powerless, because I was without sleep. I was greatly sleep deprived. And because I had seemed to have little control over when these things would occur or even knowing what they meant. And I think Leslie helped me work through a lot of that, which is the integration piece, as I call it. If I were to counsel any other people who are beginning to go through what I went through, I mean, investigate what they've been through, I would say integration is the number one thing you're looking for. It's almost like a reconciliation. It's like, okay, this is part of my life. I've contextualized it. And I think I can move forward from that point on. And in fact, Richard, a landmark for me, hypnotherapy session took place. I can't remember exactly when during the 5 years, but Leslie did an interlife hypnotic regression with me because I was dogged by the question of why me? And I think, I've talked to other abductees, experiencers, experts. That's a common question, am I victimized or is there something else at work here?
And what did you discover? Because that was my next question. Why you?
I know this is going to stretch the fabric of perhaps some of your listeners' minds, but I made an agreement before I was born. I made an agreement that I would go through these things.
Made an
and the harsh yes, with alien beings, that at some point in this lifetime, I would become aware of it if I could, and I did. And then I could reconcile it, then I could integrate it. But it was an agreement made before I got here. We can flesh out the interlife hypnosis if you like a little bit. I'm no expert, but I can talk about it and why I felt that's the why me. Why I don't have control over it, I don't think I ever will.
Do you have memories, either recovered or otherwise, of being lifted out of your bed, taken through a window, a closed window perhaps, through the ceiling, anything like that?
Rising up through the ceiling, for sure. It reminded me of when I was a teenager, I had some spontaneous out-of-the-body experiences, which I quite hated. They were terrifying. And so most people become catatonic physically when that happens. And apparently that's to facilitate the out-of-the-body experiences. and to make sure you're safe when you go through them, so you can't act them out. So I was somewhat used to that feeling. And since my teens, a handful of times I've had an out-of-the-body experience. So I know the feeling is similar when you're being lifted out and moved through solid objects. I wish I could explain it in good words, but I can't. It feels light. It feels like you're being pulled.
I want to come back to something you mentioned earlier. When you were on that plane, stage two, and you were locked in the washroom on this plane that was on fire, and you telepathically or psychically tried to communicate with your wife, who you knew was, you know, asleep back in the bed where you were. And later you had sort of evidence that confirmed that you were successful in communicating with her. Can you tell me what happened?
Yeah, it was, there's a couple of strange twists and turns to this one. So when I got up and wrote all that stuff down and thought, what the heck have I just been through? I spoke to her and I said, did you notice anything unusual last night? That was it. And it's probably, she's probably thinking, other than living with you, I don't know. But she said, yeah, she had a sense of something, but that was it. That was it. And as far as any other, say, physical sense, and I don't have a lot of physical marks and never have, there's a little bit of blood on the pillow, which I never have nosebleeds, never have, never do. So that may be considered something substantial or not. But the twist and turn, Richard, is the weirdest thing, because years and years later, I was talking to her saying, do you remember this experience in the 1980s, you know, yada, yada, yada. And she recounted an entirely different experience to me that I was unaware of. And I've been unable to fully uncover it through hypnosis. I've tried. And when she described the experience I was unaware of, not the one I was aware of, she said she was catatonic. She didn't use that word. She was switched off is the word I use. She could hear, and that was all. And as she recounted this experience to me years later, she said, oh yeah, and I heard you talking to others in the second bedroom. And that totally creeped me out and surprised me. I thought we were on base in the same place with the 80s experience, but there were obviously two.
Remarkable. All right, Robert, we'll take another time out, come back, and more to come. Don't go away.
Every town has a dark side. This is Andrew Fitzgerald from the Every Town podcast, where every single week we dive into insane and mysterious true crime stories, most of which you've never heard of. Stories like the bizarre disappearance of Tyler Davis in Columbus, Ohio, a 29-year-old father trying to find his way back to his hotel when he disappeared and was never heard from again, and Elizabeth Schoaf from Lugoff, South Carolina, who was abducted from her driveway by a madman and taken to his underground bunker in the woods. And we give you all the details you're interested in hearing about without any fluff or fillers, because ain't nobody got time for that. And cover everything from psychopaths to poltergeists. So go check out the Everytown podcast, because every town, no matter how nice it may seem, has a dark side.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. We're now crossing a zone of turbulence. Please return your seats and food trays to their upright position and make sure your carry-on luggage is safely stowed. You're about to leave everything you know behind. This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet. Strange Planet.
Wes Roberts. I called you Robert going into the break. My apology. Wes Roberts.
That's okay.
And we're talking about his lifelong, I was about to call it an abduction experiences, but do you call them abductions?
I don't call them all abductions. In fact, Leslie and I have talked about this a lot. We feel, and it's not unilaterally true, it's not a cookie cutter solution, but we feel physical abductions happen more to younger people and also less and less frequently these days. And so what I call these things, what I refer to them now as, are experiences, hence the experiencer part. I think you're still an experiencer if you're an abductee, but I think I don't want to say graduated because that makes me sound intelligent. not in this way. But over time, I met with what I consider to be councils, and apparently this is a common thread with abductees. I met with councils 2 or 3 times, and every time it was out of the body. It wasn't me like talking to you right now. And every time it was a room full of mostly alien beings, sometimes military folks, people. And I was asked if whatever it was I'd been through recently, it took, if it was okay, if I was okay, and if I was ready for the next stage. And I've always said yes in those conditions. And I joke about it because I don't know if I'd say yes if it was right now.
That little girl, alien, that you met in the farmhouse, did you have any other encounters with her?
Actually, a lifetime's worth. She was to prove to be an integral part of my life, perhaps before this life, but at least this life. I've referred to her in my books and to anyone that will listen as a twin, as my twin. Not in the twin flame sense, but twin in the sense of familiarity, like family almost. And so that was my first recollection of her in childhood. But Leslie and I went on to discover all sorts of interesting things about her. And I've had numerous experiences that have included her in different shapes and forms. And periodically, in fact, I think the last time was 2 or 3 weeks ago, she showed up in a dream. And that doesn't surprise me. And depending on what you prescribe as alien talents or characteristics, that they can step in and out of a dream. That does not surprise me. So I'm sure it was 2 or 3 weeks ago when an exceptionally tall person, thin, no figure, entered into one of my dreams. And this has happened to me a number of times. And I'll get up in the morning saying, okay, nice to see you again in some different form.
What is going on with you right now? I mean, you mentioned this, this was a dream 2 or 3 weeks ago, but are you continuing to have experiences on a weekly or nightly basis? Or as you say, you've graduated to what?
Yeah, if I knew the answer. To the next step, I mean, I'm in a state of awareness as far as I can tell, and I don't mind publicly sharing what's gone on with me, and I don't mind reaching out a helping hand if somebody needs it. And I always feel that part of my job is to, as this thing, as this person, is to say to other people, if you feel that you're going through something like this, there's others that you can talk to. And I think, and I hope, and I'm not being evangelical about it, that I'm helping to spread the word that we're bigger than what we think we are, spiritually, holistically. We're bigger than just people. And so I think that my feeling more connected to one being in particular and to others as well means that I'm discovering what I can be. And so one of the things that happened to me, for instance, when I started hypnotherapy, was I suddenly discovered, and I only recently heard, Richard, this is not unusual, that I had some healing capabilities. I am not claiming to be a healer. I'd like to make that clear. I'm not trained, and I'm not claiming to be a healer. But I felt compelled to say to people, can I try something with you? And what I tried was just basically placing my hand on an area or an inch away. And I've been told by people that have experienced this, it feels like Reiki. And it's like, I don't know anything about Reiki except what I hear or what I've read. And so I don't claim to be a healer, but I claim to be something that can introduce that to another person's system. Then they work with it. And so do I get experiences nightly or even weekly? No. Do they still happen? Yes. I'm going to say probably once a month or so. And I'm careful to examine them for the very same reasons I examined the first one, is to say, was it a dream? Was it hallucination? I don't take recreational drugs. I don't get pie-eyed or plastered if I have a glass of wine or something. I'm not prone to hallucinations. So I tend to think, okay, this one stays in this category, possible alien experience. And the last one was about 3 weeks ago or so.
Talk to me about information downloads. I mean, I've heard information downloads. There's the case of the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident back in December 1980, when someone on the base got close to the craft and reported a download of a series of ones and zeros, which he was able to recall from memory and jot down in a notebook. What kind of downloads did you experience?
So the downloads I get are typical for downloads, and these are not just happening to abductees or experiencers. I've talked to a lot of people over the last couple of years that have some kind of interest in spirit or in the possibility of something paranormal, or at least the possibility that there are others communicating with us, at least that. And a download's like a highly condensed packet of data, maybe information if you're lucky, but at least data that you cannot process in the moment. You remember something just happened. It could be quick, it could last for hours, but you remember something highly unusual happened. And I'm not exactly clear what it is. Maybe I feel a little weird. I feel a little off, but I feel like I've been handed something. And so then, as you can, I think, withstand it psychologically, emotionally, maybe even intellectually, as you can withstand it, it percolates up into the conscious mind, and then you're able to unpack it.
Can you give me a for instance? Some
download
you've been able to unpack?
I can give you a for instance, and I was playing around with numbers, just thinking, these numbers really mean something to me. And it was quite simple. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, literally. And I thought, do they mean anything? And I was really dogged by it. And I went out of my way to try and figure out what this was. And I went about it like a Sherlock Holmes kind of person. I researched things that were associated with the numbers. For instance, numerology, tarot cards, colors, anything else I could unpack about numbers 1 to 5 and how they might mean something, you know, like the Holy Trinity. I'm going through these numbers again and again and again. Nothing, nothing, nothing. I'm writing down all these notes that don't mean anything. And then months later, I was sitting in my bed. I was awake, just wondering about this stuff again. Probably overtired, which was a good thing because I was in the right state of mind. And boom. So I sat up in bed with my notebook and just started jotting stuff down. And the numbers 1 to 5 had to do with the phases of a journey. At the point you reach 5, you're going to start a new journey. And so it's never about the destination. It's kind of a process-based thing. So then I thought, okay, I wrote 2 or 3 pages down, I'm going to bed. And then half an hour later, I jump up. Here's another 2 or 3 pages. And it just spewed out of me until I had a dozen pages of notes. And that's classic. Leslie and I were talking to Grant Cameron the other day, who had a fantastic download in 2012. And he always talks about it when he's interviewed. And, he'll say the same thing. A download can change your life. It did for me.
Are those a series of downloads and notes, is that what led to your second book, An Experiencer's Garden?
I think it pushed me a little forward with it. My current partner was saying, well, you know, you got to keep writing. And it's like, I don't want to. I'm not trying to sell books. And I'm really not, you know. It was just, okay, let's get the first one out, which is kind of unique because Leslie's commenting from her chair what it all looked like from her expertise. And I'm saying, this is what it looked like to me. And so the second book was an effort to, and you might be right, Richard, it was an effort to categorize or catalog the things that you might go through, things like locations, themes, things like beings, things like physicality, things like surgery, or various experiments and odd stuff I've been through. And so it was my effort to try to categorize and catalog it. And then when I finished, I added this big section at the end about why me and all that. But when I finished, I thought, how boring. I actually thought, what a boring book.
All right. I'm sure people don't find it boring. Is any other common stages? You mentioned the airport. Is that mm-hmm. common? When you speak to other experiencers, do they talk about an airport? Are there other settings, like, I don't know, a doctor's office or anything like that, that's kind of a common thread with other experiencers?
Gosh, yes, I think there are a number of them. Any transportation hub, I'm going to say. So an airport's ideal. Train stations, I've been on trains a few times. Automobiles sometimes. Doctor's offices or clinics? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. A number of other experiencers or abductees I've talked to have been looked at by doctors or things that claim to be doctors. It's not all bad. I feel my life was intervened with in a good way when I was desperately ill at one point with pneumonia because I had an experience in what I felt to be a clinic. And a doctor whose clothes didn't fit exactly, really long legs and arms. He was, I'd have to say, running some kind of a machine over me, not touching me, just close to me. And I remember when I woke up, I began to feel better and better, and pneumonia was soon gone. Is that a coincidence? Possibly. You know, I'm not going to push the envelope here. I don't know. But it sure as heck wasn't a doctor.
So what's next then, do you think? Are you looking forward to the next, whatever this is, assignment, the next stage, the next task, the next mission?
I am, actually. It's a funny thing for me. I was mired in being overly analytical when I was younger. Too intellectual, I was told, too logical. And yet, here I am, hopefully a balanced person at this point. I still do my teaching job. You know, I still do things that everybody does. I still drink water, you know, the usual stuff. But I am actually, I'm looking forward to any potential next stages. I don't feel I'm being used by them. I feel that we're in some kind of a partnership. Largely, I'm unaware of the full nature of it. And I'm always trying to reach out. Sometimes they reach back. If I look at my transcripts, Richard, they tell me I'm really bad at reaching out. They've said that much. I'm just not good at it. They're really good at it, but I'm not too good at it. So I expect it'll be a surprise when it gets there.
You're not good at reaching out, meaning what? They're looking for more feedback from you?
They, to have a real-time communication with them, they have to change things generally to make that happen for us. Change the immediate environment, change your physicality, change your chemistry. They have to make changes for that to happen. And so they want us to reach back, is my understanding. And reaching back is not something I'm particularly good at, except, and I should clarify this, when I'm under hypnosis, it's much easier for me to do it.
Wes, how do we get a copy of An Experiencer's Garden?
My gosh, you can go to amazon.ca, amazon.com, or pop over to wesgroberts.com, and there's links to the books there too.
All right. And that link is in the episode notes. Wes, great speaking with you. Thank you so much for this.
Thank you, Richard. It's been great. Thank you.
A new Richard Serrett's Strange Planet drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.